I am unashamed. What about you?
So I'm sitting in the Atlanta airport, which I do quite frequently. Atlanta, Dallas.
I know where you're going with this.
So I'm sitting there and, you know, flight delayed, of course, you know. I think we've only had two out of the last 15 or 20 that everything worked perfectly. But I look up and here I see Cy first, you know.
Hard to miss.
He comes kind of rushing up because he would have probably, y'all would have probably missed the flight. I don't know if it had been on time. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, we were running through the airport.
So I see Cy come up first wheezing, you know. Yeah. With his COPD.
Whoa. Wow. Oh, boy. Woo. You know what's weird about Cy is he does that, you know, when it exerts energy.
Right.
And he says it's the 30 years of smoking, which, you know, his lung capacity, which he quit. He hadn't smoked a cigarette in how many years? I mean, and you were instrumental in that.
That's right.
15 or 20.
You know, they opened his heart up. Yeah, he had a heart attack while we were duck hunting. And he said, "Boys, I think I just had a heart attack." Well, we all laughed because, you know, I thought he was kidding. And he's like, "No, I really did." And so
only a Robertson. So we're like, only a Robertson would laugh when someone says, "I think I just had."
Well, you remember Phil was like, "Do you want us to take you out?" And he said, "No, let's finish the hunt, and then I'll go get it checked out." Like, so 3 hours later, I call up there to check on him. Oh no, they're doing open heart surgery on him immediately. I mean, he's like, "Boys, they busted my chest open." Hey.
I was in there when the surgeon came in and told him, he said, Uncle Cy, he called him Uncle Cy, which I thought was funny. When he's fixing the cut on Cy, and he says, "Uncle Cy," he said, I'm going to shoot straight with you. I'm fixing to crack you open. We're going to get this thing fixed. He said, "But if you keep smoking in about 3 or 4 years, we're going to be right. If you survive the next one, we're going to be right back here. Again."
So, yeah, so he quit.
He quit. But, anyway, but then he kind of started smoking cigars or something. Dad finally just
got so on. So I said, "Hey, get off the smoke." And, you know, he never smoked another.
He did.
I remember he was in the duck blind. It was like a brother intervention. Yeah. You know, he's like, "Cy, we like you around here. Hey, you can't walk 10 yards without going, whoa, hey, wow." Good. You know, last year he got so bad. You know, I had to carry him on my back. To the ducko.
I remember.
I was like, "Get on my back, Cy," you know, which I was surprised. I mean, he weighs about 70 pounds, you know.
Oh, he's skinny.
I told him, I said, "We'll get you there, the blind." I said, "You know, we had to tote you. We'll hire a couple of guys that tote you in here."
But, you know, we did back when we were doing Duck Dynasty, I told him, I was like, I know this is a little crude. I said, "But if you ever could capture Cy when he goes to the bathroom and does number one." I don't even want to talk about number two. I was like, it is a full play-by-play.
Oh, boys. And I don't know who the boys are, but the boys are getting the play-by-play.
Yeah.
Boys.
Woo. Yeah. Because at Duck Commander, look, you can hear through the walls where the bathroom is right beside where we build the duck call. And every day, look, and it's literally once an hour. Because I'm like, "You think that heart thing was a problem? You need to look into whatever's
the
causing
plumbing.
This."
We got some plumbing issues.
He's running.
Check out the old prostate.
And he goes in there, but he's like, whoa. And I'm like, "Whoa." I mean, and he comes back, and I was like, "Cy, I have never heard anything like that. I mean, what did you eat last night?" He's like, "Oh, no, that was just number one, boy."
Well, anyway, so I don't know how we steer. But next time Cy's on, we'll have to see how he's doing with that. But so I'm in the airport. At least now, first I see Cy. Then I look up. Here comes Jace. Yeah. And then right after that, it's Philip and Millen carrying a big bag of grub, you know. And they're all got their camo on. Of course, you know, it's just as soon as they show up, it
did
turns
out. Did you realize we had matching outfits
on?
I did not. That was not planned. I mean.
I thought it was like mini me. And
oh, it was embarrassing.
And so I was like, "What are y'all doing here?" So tell us about what
you're
doing.
Look, so we go to Richmond, Virginia. This was a Duck Commander Yeti production. They wanted us. I do one event for them because they've always, you know, sponsored me and been good to me. And then Duck Commander was like, "Hey, I mean, how about a little something for the effort?" So y'all go to Richmond, Virginia. There's a store there. I think it's named Green Top, which it had a green top. And so me and Cy were just basically going to sit there and do like a meet and greet. So we get there. There are thousands of people. I mean, we're driving through this sea of humanity. And I rolled down the window, like, what are y'all doing? They're like, oh, we're in line to see y'all. I was like, are you nuts?
Have you ever waited in line to see anybody?
No, I've said this many times. I mean, this is no.
Which is humble. I mean, we're humble, but still.
Yeah, I'm like, there's no, I'm waiting in line for Jesus, and that's about it. The list is short, you know. So I'm embarrassed that people do this, but I bring that up just to say that the number one, you know what the number one topic of conversation was? This podcast. And so it made me feel a lot better about doing this. So there was a lot of people that had been inspired. We had numerous people come up there in tears, wanted us to pray with them, which is what's so weird is we're at a store. It's not like we're at a church building, you know, and we're having all these people that some of them want to be baptized. And, you know, I'm like, look.
That's the way it ought to work, Jace.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was like, I'm kind of in a tight spot here as far as making that happen. But, you know, and y'all have heard me say this many times, I'm like, if you fall in love with Jesus, you'll figure it out.
Plus, if you have the resurrection on straight and your faith is in it, in the Bible, it's presented the resurrection as the centerpiece, immortality. You have that on straight. It's only then that you can maybe grin or smile when someone tells you, Your brother has just had a heart attack. Your sister has just passed on to the other side.
Right.
We're looking at it like we've been delivered from a fear of death because Jesus shared in our humanity, and by his death, he destroyed him, who was the power of death.
Right.
That is the devil who in hell captive those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. If you don't fear death, because Jesus, he says, look, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life, I am the resurrection. You look at it that way and you're like, life does not seem to, the bumps are not as severe as you go forward, Al.
Well,
by the way, the people you said you talked to in Virginia, there was a guy from Virginia. He and the girl he was dated, I gave him sound advice. How are you doing? Pretty good. You from Virginia? Good to see you. He said, I've come all the way down here, Mr. Robinson, to be baptized by you. And I said, hey, welcome. I said, is that your wife? And he said, we're dating right now. I said, don't get in her britches anymore until you marry her. He said, we've already discussed that. He said, how did you know that? I said, I just put that in there so you can know. You are to live a holy life in Christ Jesus. I said, look, marry her. I said, marry her or get away from her. If you can't get away from her, just marry the woman and get after it.
That is good sounding, but I tell people that, you know, I think.
I said, you're fixing to say Jesus is Lord before I baptize you up there in that pool of water. I said, you need to remember it's repent and be baptized. I said, you know that's not right. He said, of course. I said, marry her.
So we're always on the lookout for emergencies. They could be weather related. They could be, you know, who knows, related. Preparation is what a lot of folks are into. And the folks at My Patriot Supply, they are into preparation of food. So this bucket here contains a 4-week food supply. So, you know, the food lasts about 25 years.
Every time you say that, it makes me laugh.
I know, but it's true. And so they're like in these vacuum pack deals. And so like
floods,
droughts. You know,
this is like
even a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks worth would be very advantageous for people. A hurricane's just blown by.
That's right.
You know, if you got some of it buried,
something to eat.
They're trying to bridge the gap of like perishable foods with like heavenly foods. You always thought about the manna and the quail that God provided. So this, you know, because he can just do that whenever.
Some kind of catastrophic event, having grub on the scene
would be important.
Would be very important.
That lasts 25
years in storage. You got breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So here's the deal. If you act now, you save $100 on a 4-week supply food kit, which looks like this. If you order today, you get 2-day delivery. They'll bring it right to your door.
And it's 4-week supply.
Four weeks
supply. So if you bought 12 of them,
You're going to save $100.
No, you'd have a whole year.
That's right. So go to preparewithphil.com. That's the website, preparewithphil.com.
There's a difference between paranoia and preparedness. These people are just saying, just be prepared, just in case.
Nothing with wrong with it. With a slight hint of paranoia.
Just a slight.
Which fits right in with us.
Perfect. Preparewithphil.com. Save $100.
But I think for people listening, I mean, you give people advice. I mean, ultimately, it's up to everyone, individual, to figure this out, you know, to get hooked in on Jesus. And we all struggle. But one of the things I do in my speeches is I you know, tell your advice you gave to me. You know, you went through all the sexually transmitted diseases and, you know, keep everything in your pocket till you get married. You know, you had all these slogans, you know, and I was like,
yeah, don't be immoral. Sexual immorality is used at the top of all the list of sins, right, Al? That's
well, exactly then I make the point that you gave me that speech. I was like 8 years old. So, you know, I had no idea what you were talking about whatsoever.
I was trying to instill in you the dangers.
It worked. But now, I mean, look, of all the things I've gotten wrong, because we're all flawed, you know, the one thing I managed to do, it was, you know, the first sex I had with a woman was my wedding night.
Yep.
And but through that, I've now gone out there and look, it's our job. We're not the policemen of the world. We're you know, God's grace, men and women. We need God's grace. That's correct. We share Jesus. We stay out of the judging.
You can't make them do anything.
No, you stay out of the judging business. We're not policemen, you know, and I think a lot of religious groups get that wrong.
Right.
But you also promote things that were God's idea that are awesome. So, I mean, you know, in my speeches, I'm saying, you know, let me tell you about the greatest sex in the world. Well, look, every time I say that, I have everyone's full attention at that moment. I said, do you want to know how you can have the greatest sex on the planet? You can hear a pin drop. That captures people's attention. Then I go through the God-sanctioned, disease-free, comparison-free, guilt-free, shame-free between a man and a woman who's known no other sex outside of this one night as a married couple. And even though it's not this romantic TV version of bliss, it's more like the biological experiment, there's something to be said about doing it God's way that is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no shame.
Phil Robertson, did not do it God's way to begin with. I said, well, at least I can instill in my children, you boys, I said, I can instill in these sons of mine the right way. So
well, I think it gives young people motivation. I do it for the young people. It gives them motivation to wait, because I'm like, you want to have the greatest sex on the planet? Here's the plan.
It. It is the only way.
And they're
way to
like, roll. Oh, okay. Well, who don't want to be the greatest? You know.
That's right.
But it is, when you look at all those factors, even people in the world will agree with that. If you had to, if you compared it, you know, to the sex you can have in that realm. That is pretty special.
Well, kudos to Texas, because I spoke out at a rodeo arena, you know, dirt out in the middle, and they rode bulls, had a bull riding deal. Then they took a tractor, pulled a trailer up out on the dirt, and the people came out of the stands and came down, roughly 5,000 or so. So they all, and I looked out at them and I said, a lot of young people out here. So I said, I just stood up at the mic and I said, I want to know, raise your hand if you've never told a lie. For the ones of you who have never told a lie, raise your hand. And I looked out across the audience, 5,000 people, a lot of young people. And I looked from left to right and no one raised their hand to say, I've never lied. I said, I only ask you that question, raise your hand if you've never lied, to see if you would say, I've never lied, which means you just did, which would be a sin. I said, you Texans are pretty wise. So the bottom line is, that's where I started, you know, and I ended up with the good news of Jesus. Here's what God has done for you. I did note that there were a lot of young people in the audience out of the 5,000, way more younger people than older people, which I thought, this is a good thing here. And I did note that they paid careful attention to what I was saying. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. In other words,
yeah, well, it's the same
they
effect.
They paid careful attention. I thought, you know what? There's still hope for the United States of America. And that was in kudos to the Texans over in East Texas.
Yeah, Tyler.
For stealing something in their children.
So I saw some of the videos, the guy, Ben, who went with you, filmed some of it from behind you. And so that whole middle section right in front of you looked like they're all like teenage girls.
Teenage girls.
I mean, there was a big throng, mighty throng
and
of teenage girls.
Old graybeard here. I mean,
what? That was like Mick Jagger.
That's there. What I was going to say. The event, I mean, I figured out, you know, a long time ago, but it just reiterated it when I was in Richmond with Si. It's not about us. I mean, these people are so starved in our world for, you know, God-based principles. Because you're not seeing it.
They get nothing out of the school system.
Or Hollywood. It's so rare that somebody says, you know, even this podcast is named, I'm unashamed. Yeah, I'm not ashamed that I'm going to heaven and going to live forever and want people to go with me.
Why wouldn't I talk about it?
Al, the biggest applause I got during the whole thing, except right at the end, of course, they all, you know, they were already standing, but the biggest applause I got, and I was surprised, I said, why don't we just try, based on what I'm seeing and y'all are looking at via the internet and what other vile thing you're looking at, I said, why don't we just try loving God and loving each other? What in the world could be wrong with it? Look, they roared. Young people in the state of Texas roared like, yeah, why don't we just try loving God and loving each other? I said, what's the downside to that? That was the biggest applause. I took that to heart thinking, you know, these young folks here, they may get it.
Well, you know what I love about...
I felt better having talked to them.
About Texans is they love Texas. I mean, they love...
Yeah, there's a pride there.
There's a pride there. And so when I go to Texas, my opening line is always... I say, I hear that in Texas, you guys have in your state constitution that if you ever deem it necessary, you can vote yourselves to become your own country, the country of Texas.
Yeah.
Of course, when I say that, I just hit the nerve, you know, yeah, they're like, yeah, everybody cheers. I said, well, look, I got an idea because, you know, things are getting pretty bad. You know, the world's getting to be a scary place. We got all kind of radicals running around. I said, if that day comes sooner rather than later, I'm speaking on behalf of the people of Louisiana. We want to come with you, and we want to be Texiana. we want to join forces. I said, we'll bring the food because, you know, and the music because we got that. You guys got the Texas pride. And then everybody cheers. And then at the end, my outline is I say, and we're going to leave Oklahoma and Arkansas to fend for themselves. Of course, because Texas people, you know, in Oklahoma, they got the right. So it's like, whatever I go there, that audience is mine.
Well, I'll tell you this. I moved Virginia way up in the batting order of states that I've enjoyed based on that. There was two things that I thought stood out to me on this trip. One of them's disturbing. But number one is the amount of African-Americans that were in line that, and because the guy who I was, you know, who put all this on together, he's like, this is so strange to me to see different races of people in this line, and they're just as excited.
They ought to see us on Sunday morning. They'd really love that.
Well, this conversation happened because there was a guy in line who was he worked for the airlines or whatever. But he said, where'd y'all eat last night? Well, we went to this place called the Iron Horse, which I'm giving them free advertisement. But let me tell you something. It was awesome.
It
was good. Good food. I met everybody
Iron
there.
Iron Horse. What kind of food was it?
Oh, it was steaks seafood. And, you know, but they seasoned their food, which is weird. You know, once you leave Louisiana, you just left the seasoning. But it was fantastic. But this guy, he's like, man, he's like, well, I need to take you down to Lee's. You know, it's the best fried chicken in the world, you know. And I was like, well, do they let, you know, white people in there? And he's like, no. And he didn't say it like it's a racial thing. He just like, you know, everybody there is, you know, African-American. I was like, well, what? He said, they going to let me in? He's, oh, they let you in there. You inside. And so the guy's listening to him invite us. And I was like, well, why? Because they seen the show. He said, oh, no, we know you love us. And when he said that, it, you know, I didn't really think anything about it. But this guy sitting next to me, oh, that impacted him, you know. And he was like, why did he say that? And I said, well, and I brought up the podcast, you know. I was like, you know, people that look at us in our world, they tend to stereotype everybody. Mm-hmm. They see somebody from the South who hunts, and they think there's these racial, you know, undertones and all this. I said, but people that know us, they know, you know, we're like, I used it since we were at a sporting goods store. I said, we're like deer. I said, you know, the Lord has made us colorblind. I said, like, I haven't noticed the amount of African Americans in line. You did. I didn't notice that. Hmm. I was like, you know, we're at a place in Jesus where we're colorblind. I never knew it. And so that leads me to the second thing that was disturbing. The amount of women that were hitting on Si was insane.
That's scary.
Look, they were, and African Americans, Caucasians, you know, Spanish, it didn't matter. They were in love with Si, and it was too. First, I thought they were kidding, and I thought, they're not kidding. Of course, I did the same thing every time. Now, he flirted with them. He hugged them. You know, they were kissing on him. And
come here, darling.
Yeah. And but he would then say, but hey, I'm already married. I'm married to a flaming redhead. And if you've ever been around, yeah, he said, if you've ever been around redheads, you know this, that if I go off with you, I'm going to feel the fury of that woman. So, hey, I appreciate it, but I'm taken. And then every time they would leave, he'd say, what can I say, boys? When you got it, you got it.
So we have a group called NetSuite that basically they have a lot of business management software is what they do.
Sweet. Oh, that's way out of my league.
Yeah.
Sweet as in sugar or sweet no, as in a
sweet as in a suite, like a... You know, I'm staying in a suite, SUITE.
Yeah. Okay.
NetSuite by Oracle is the group. So basically what they do is they have your finance, your accounting, your orders, you know, all the things that you, you know, basically at Duck Commander in the old days, it was Miss K was our NetSuite because she was accounts receivable, accounts payable.
How do we survive that?
Loan shark. If she were here, she'd tell you that. So, obviously in today's world, you got to be a little bit more, what would you say? A little bit more,
organized.
There you go. There's our word. So, the folks at Oracle have come up with this NetSuite. It's a great business plan. It's good for you, especially small business. I don't got a lot of small businesses out there. So right now they're offering, a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits, and it's at netsuite.com. And Jace is
so
right.
This
there.
Is any business,
any business, especially
like
small
only
business.
Internet business or just no, business in general.
Yeah, business in general. So they give you everything you need to know. 7 strategies to grow your profits. I mean, that's pretty important. So if you go to netsuite.com/fill, this is how you're going to be able to get your free guide: 7 key strategies to grow your profits. netsuite.com/fill. Check it out. So look, so I'm speaking of Christine, because what happened is the people that watched the show, Christine was not on the show. I mean, she did a few
by little, her choice.
She by her choice, right. On. She didn't want to be on the show. And so they thought Si was a, you know, a widower. And
yeah.
So, I mean, all these,
well, they still do. I don't think they've
yeah, they haven't figured it out. So I'm in Nashville this week, and when Si was with you, so Christine calls me, his wife, and I answer the phone, and she said, of course, you get have to know our Aunt Christine. She's just like right into the thing. She said, do you know where my husband is? I looked at the phone. I was
did
like,
you know he was in Virginia?
No,
me?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. So I was like, no, Christine, I'm in Nashville. I said, how long has he been missing? You know, and she said, well, I don't know. I tried to call Jay. I couldn't get him. You know, so Si is like gone on a trip, and Christine didn't know. And she said, well, I just wanted him to know I got out of the hospital. I was like,
but he knew that because when I was with him, he said, yeah. I was like, well, she's in the hospital. Si, you didn't have to go. And he's like, oh, no, she'll be all right. You know, you get our age, you go in there, you know.
So all right, moving along from Duck Commander stories, ladies and gentlemen.
Are you ready? Are you tired of talking about that?
Yeah. I like these blunt transitions.
Yeah, me too. It's just so.
I wanted to bring that up because I just wanted to, you know, thank the crowd for, you know, supporting this and, you know, what we do here. I definitely felt the outcry.
Well, and anytime we get that opportunity is great. I appreciate Dad saying that as well. And the folks that come here. people come and just kind of turn themselves in. You had how many states represented last couple of weeks?
7-8 states in the last week. I've baptized individual California, Minnesota, Virginia, Arizona. So yesterday was a wonderful thing. I mean, the most honest hearts you ever want to run across, and they made the great distance, New Mexico. That was during the week this week, a man and his wife. So I walked down on the river and baptized him in the river, went over the gospel with them, but they were already had been listening to us, and they said, you know, we just said, let's just go over there. And
yeah, so people reach out. We say, come see us on Sunday. We don't mind. I mean, you're speaking.
I'm preaching this Sunday.
Yeah.
And I preach yesterday. So if y'all want to make the journey.
We got a guy, Ian, from down south in Covington. He came up a few weeks ago and got baptized. He's coming through this Sunday. He said he's been on fire, you know.
For the record, it doesn't matter who baptized you. I think 1 Corinthians 1 says something about that.
Right. We try to tell them, why don't you just get someone over there, wherever you are, 1,000 miles away, to baptize you. It'd be fine, you know. But they said, we just want to meet up, Mr. Robin. I said, hey, load up, come on, let's go.
It's fun. Well, you get hooked on Jesus, you'll work it out.
And we always walk that fine line. It's like, so the Bible says, give honor to those who are due honor. I mean, so there is a biblical principle that it's okay to honor people, but when it's you, it feels weird. So Dad, speaking of that, so I'll transition for you, Dad, before we get to this to the text. Dad was recently, we were notified that he is going to be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame.
Really?
Yeah. So
I didn't know that.
61st induction. Last year, our old friend, the Mad Hatter, they inducted him into the Louisiana. Wow. And Saban's in there.
And he got so excited, he moved to Kansas.
That's right. But so it's a lot of, like, so I'm looking at it. Here's the thing they said. So I'm looking in this thing. It's mostly last year Peyton Manning went in. But look, so he goes. Archie is there at the thing and all this. It's a big deal. It's a great honor. And Dad, you were one of only three people, even though you had a pretty good sports career, high school and college.
Went to Louisiana Tech.
Right, played football. Bradshaw was your backup. Yeah, so Bradshaw's in here too, obviously. So, but Dad is one of only three that's really more recognized when you think sports Hall of Fame for being a sportsman, a hunter, as much as being. But you actually did both.
But you actually turned. I mean, you had a promising career and you actually could have pursued that, but you'd rather, you know, it's like what you told me when I asked you when I was a kid. I was like, well, why didn't you keep playing football? And you were like, hey, they play football during duck season. That's right. I was like,
my heart was just not in it.
Right.
I mean, I had the talent.
You had the ability.
The talent without the heart.
Right.
Well, you have to have both if you're going to pursue that. Plus, they weren't shaking tens and tens of millions of dollars to play in those days in the 60s.
Bradshaw
made $100,000 a year.
Bradshaw was the number one draft pick in 71, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And his bonus for being the number one draft pick was $100,000, is what he told us that night. We met him.
Yeah.
And
he paid out over 10 years. big bucks. What I'm trying to say is the lure of it, the big bucks, it was just play the game without the big bucks. Well, if somebody had come along and said, probably, you know, if you do well here, you get a signing bonus or whatever, you make $10-15 million a year. I mean, that's on the low end.
Right.
I'm thinking,
So you
probably
didn't have the
I probably lure. Would have tried it.
Just for the money.
If it had been that kind of money floating around. But
it is now.
Yeah.
So our good friends at Keeps are reminding us that we don't want to lose our hair. I saw a guy at church Sunday. He had an impressive beard.
No hair on top.
No hair on top. Completely bald. And I was telling him about Keeps. I was like, well, you may be too far along. He's having to shave his head. And he said, I'm trying to come up with a product where I don't have any hair grow out. I said, well, I don't know about that.
Because people are going to extremes.
Yeah.
They're either going.
He had the full beard, but he was bald headed.
Or they go bald headed.
Right.
Because it's like, you don't want to be caught in between. That's why a company like this.
So this is to catch you a little bit early. Basically, there's a DHT is what it's called, and it's a hormone. And so they found some meds that will kind of get that going. There's a generic version. That's what the guys at Keeps have done. So you're starting to lose that hair right in the middle. It helps you grow it back. I'm going to try it myself, so I'll let you know whether it works or not, because I got a little bald spot coming up. So if you go to keeps.com, KEEPS.com, /door, D-O-O-R.
Just like the doorway
to hair. That's right. Keeps.com/door. You're going to get 50% off your first order. You get a free online doctor consult. Check it out. Keeps.com/door. Well, so what's interesting, Dad, is that
By the way, y'all are my sons, and I raised you. Looking back, as far as my spiritual well-being, I made the right call.
Oh yeah.
Oh no doubt
about it.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because you may not have ever.
I love football, but I mean, my heart is just not make a livelihood. I chose not to do that.
So you played in an era in the late 60s. There was a little bit of TV, but not much. I mean, it was pre-TV era it is now. So I never really knew how good you were. I assumed because you were starting Hannah Bradshaw, you were good. So during the show, the assistant athletic director at the University of Alabama, which is kind of funny, we're such big LSU fans, they were huge fans of the show. And so he reached out to me. He said, hey, I got something I want to send you. I want you to show your dad. And I said, well, sure, what is it? And he said, it's the game film, and they've colorized it. Alabama, made it big. And of him playing against Alabama in 1966,
yeah, I watched it.
I did too.
Kenny the Snake Stabler was their quarterback.
And they won a national championship.
Bear Bryant, by the way.
Right. So he sends me that. I bring it down here to you, and you and I watched it together. And, of course, it's really great because they colorized it. And, I mean, you get all these angles. But I was stunned at how good Dad was. Like, his release was amazing.
But it was more, I mean, you're 6'4", 230, and are athletic. When you think about today's athletes, that's what you have to be. You know, we've met enough professional athletes. Yeah, I mean, you're just big bone. And if you're athletic and can move, well, you're going to make it. You know, I mean, you always talked about your arm, but I was just looking at you thinking, oh, no, I get it.
Yeah.
If you're 6'4", 230 and can take off running without falling down every five steps, you know, and you have an arm. Oh, no. And that's the way it looked. That's what stood out to me. Yeah. You're a very athletic quarterback in a day.
And by the way, Dad passed for like 220 yards against Alabama, who won a national championship that year. And Bear Bryant even mentioned you the next day. Of course, he didn't mention my name. He's the number 10. That number 10, he only called people by their number, which I thought
But if you'd have had the zone read back then,
oh my goodness.
Oh, you would have just dominated.
Right.
Because I noticed you look like one of the more bigger, because the linemen look like they're 250. I mean, they weren't that much bigger than
you. Someone asked me one time, they said, when y'all played Alabama, what was that like? I said, well, when the ball was snapped, I said, it sounded like a clap of thunder.
When they hit your guy.
When the ball hit my hands, it was like a clap of thunder. Man to man. Kawoom. It was loud.
Well, trust me, I saw the film. Your men went backwards.
Oh.
there was a red.
I've never seen. I felt sorry for you, running
for my life as they were coming at me from every direction, screaming like wild, crazy
men. Came across in the film.
Yeah.
Oh, you were literally running for your life.
You should have been there. It's like listening to thundering hooves of the a bunch of cattle in there all after me. And boy, when they caught me, they ripped me. They told me I threw some interceptions because
I was amazed too. Your receivers drop ball.
Oh, hit them right in the hands.
It was depressing.
So here's what's interesting, Dad. So that's, and we're honored obviously by this. It's a great honor to give honor to whom honor is due.
Hunting ducks, to put it bluntly, is a lot more fun.
Yeah. And a lot less dangerous.
I'm sorry. I just would be on the bus going to a football game, and I would be looking out the window, and we would go through those big creek bottoms if we were driving from Louisiana over to Mississippi or whatever, and a big, you know.
Just your heart, wasn't it?
I mean, and I just would look at those woods, and I'm thinking, what in the world am I doing right along here?
All right, so
as a jock,
I got to tell the story, Dad. So about,
if you don't finish the story, we're going to be done.
Hurry up, we won't even have any Bible verses today.
We're good. So about 5 years ago, this is all going to tie together. 5 years ago, we get a call from Louisiana Tech, and you really haven't had much to do. You've been down here hunting, building a business, preaching to people. So we get a call.
Never been back.
So we get a call, and they're like, look, Bradshaw's going to be here. We want to recognize you both. And you didn't want to do it. You were like, I said, well, you know, Bradshaw was asking. He wants to interview you for Fox Sports. And because they were televising that game. Joe Montana's son was playing for Tulane. That's who they were playing. So I talked you into going. You didn't want to go. Just full disclosure here. So we go. And I thought it was just going to be that. Well, we're up in the coach's office, which is Lou Holtz's son is the coach there. And so we're up in the office, and Bradshaw and Dad are signing stuff. And it was really great because the first time really you'd had contact with him in many, many years. And they're talking about it, just two old country boys from Louisiana made it big, him and doing what he does, you doing what you do. And so they're telling stories. And so then the president of the university comes in. Of course, all the president's men, you know, they come in, they got their suits on. And so they kind of got everybody's attention.
I'd never carried on a conversation with the top dogs at the university prior to this point.
So they come in to this office, it gets quiet, and the president informs Dad and us and Bradshaw that Dad is being honored as the 2014 Alumnus of the Year. So, which puts you in the Alumni Hall of Fame. So Dad's standing there, and the president's talking, and everybody claps, you know, and so everybody kind of looks to Dad like to accept this honor.
Well, you got to give your speech.
Right. So Dad, who doesn't know about it, none of us did. So Dad looks over at me, and Jace, you know, Dad wasn't enough to know. Like he was addressing them, but he was
Phil's done that his whole life.
So this
he's
was
looking at you talking to me,
but it's a confrontation, yeah. But he's looking away. So he looks at me, cigar store Indian face. I mean, and he says, Al, you remember we used to fish the Ouachita River? And they got like just instantly quiet. And I knew, I was like, oh crap, this is going to be bad. So he said, we were getting 30 cents a pound for buffalo. You remember that? Yeah, Dad, I remember that.
70 cents for catfish.
70 cents for catfish. Tubs of fish going up the hill, going in to get the duck call business started. You remember that, Al?
So now it's getting awkward.
It's getting awkward. Everybody's like, where's he going with this? He says, nobody from Louisiana Tech University ever call me and talk to me about anything other than they thought I was some kind of idiot. With 2 degrees, so he said all this. So the look on their face is like they're shocked, but they're like
they're thinking whoever had the idea to honor this clown.
Somebody needs in to the be president's fired. Entourage was sweating because they were thinking, oh no, this is abort, abort. So then, so you said it. Here's what you said. I'll never forget this. You said, but now I'm on a hit television show. And all of a sudden, I went from an idiot to a genius in 40 years. What do you think about that, Al? He's doing the whole thing to me, and I'm looking at him just like, "Where? How do we get out of this? You know, we're trapped." So Bradshaw starts laughing big, which allowed everybody to laugh. So then they thought, oh, this is like a joke. And Bradshaw says, Phil, they don't care about any of all that. They just want a big fat check. You got money now. Don't you know how this thing works? Well, then they look mortified. All their little guys were coming back to us and said, that's not what this was about. We weren't trying
but
to
solicit. But kind of in a way.
It is.
It is. About. They're like, hey, help us out here. Phil, we want you to become a booster.
Oh, the twists and turns of life.
So anyway. Look, so
but it's a great university.
It is.
But they honored you.
Bradshaw is one of the best dudes you ever want to run across.
But you brought up yesterday a key point. They honored the on the Louisiana Hall of Fame or whatever that's called. But you brought that point up yesterday when you spoke at our church that, Phil, you were the only one that, you know, they had their accomplishments or their description.
It's accolades.
And they had, what was it?
Here's what it says, Dad. So it's hanging in the Louisiana Tech Alumni Hall of Fame.
So I made the wall.
Oh, there's a wall. And look, the university goes back 1860, so there's a lot of people on the wall.
I didn't know
but
that.
But get to what it says.
Every year,
this is the key.
They put it
I
in there.
I have no idea. So glad he's gone or...
So look, I'm looking, I'm reading. Man, business, sports. I mean, you got all these accolades. I look at yours, which no one looked like you. By the way, everybody else was...
Shocker.
Suit, nice, you know, their picture.
All right, Captain Obvious.
You know, you had the bandana, the beard.
I bet that was kind of weird.
So here's what it said. It said, duck hunting icon, which if you're called the duck commander, that's a fair. Then it said, television personality, which let's face it, you wouldn't be on the wall if you hadn't been.
Iffy, but okay.
And then it says, servant of Christ.
Servant of Christ.
So you, Phil Ryerson, are the only alumnus in the Tech Alumni Hall of Fame that mentioned the name of Jesus Christ.
I was shocked.
It's because if they reel back some time and saw the way I lived while I was at Louisiana Tech, the last thing they would have ever concluded, he'll turn out to be a servant of Christ. They probably thought, you know, the son of the devil himself.
Yeah. But the fact that they put that on there shows that they noticed. So I took that as a positive thing.
Yeah, and I helped them notice. But you know, what I'm saying is, here's my point. So I tell the whole thing to say this. You, Dad, you don't want to be honored.
No.
You don't. I mean, it's never been your thing. No. That's why you kind of tend to run away from stuff like that. But it's important.
That's the only time, by the way, I've ever been back to Louisiana Tech is
right.
What you're talking about.
Exactly. But what's important is that everybody that comes in there, because people know who you are. Everybody that goes to Louisiana Tech University, they say, Phil Rogers, oh, yeah, Duck Dynasty. I mean, they immediately know who you are. But when they see that you're honoring Christ, then it's worth it. I mean, what I'm saying is, even if you get honor, as long as you honor back to Christ, that's what we're supposed to do.
That goes into the whole reason why
I appreciate for them doing that.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, we're sitting here for that reason.
That's right.
It's more about what we discovered in here, which this book led to a person.
That's right. So last time we talked about faith and we talked a lot about Jan and sort of her role and influence and how that kind of plays its way out. When in our story where we kind of left off was the children of Israel, you know, now they're out there. They were at the mountain. We talked about that before. Law, all these terrible things. But the thing I noticed about them that's really interesting, and the same thing happens today, is how quickly they lost their faith.
Yep.
I mean, like they would see amazing things. I mean, Moses is showing them some amazing things. God's doing things. He's sending food out of the sky. They go out and pick up bread every day. I mean, you know, this is an amazing time to be alive and be a believer. And yet it seemed like you turn two pages in Exodus and then they're like, we want to go back. We're hungry. We're not eating the right stuff. We're grumbling and complaining. So the question I want to ask y'all today is, why is it that people have a lack of faith? And what do you see in that when you start to see a person waver? What are some of the things you sort of see in their life?
I look at it like, I mean, because
none of us want to lose our faith.
You did say all these terrible things, but it was, the law is good. It was all intended, everything that was intended through God. I mean, he was trying to set up this idea that he wanted to be with people. And when you do that, there are expectations. But it always comes back to the same thing, is this struggle versus this temporary happiness versus this long-term, eternal, unseen joy. And life is tough. It's full of ups and downs. I mean, you just think about how many times you've gone, you know, and had this spiritual high at a worship service or a camp experience or some kind of conference, and boy, you're ready to set the world on fire. And then the next day, you have one of these days where literally nothing goes right and you struggle. And the next thing you know, you're griping and complaining. You're having a knockdown drag out with your wife. And then your kid gets in trouble and you're just, and all of a sudden, you know, you don't have any money and the bills are, and you're just like, well, where's this God now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just think that struggle is shown there, but it's no different than what we go through, and we're on the side of grace. We have no excuse.
Three little texts. One of them is when Jesus struck Saul of Tarsus down on the road of Damascus, he said, who are you? Paul, Saul at that time, who are you? He said, I'm Jesus whom you're persecuting. Get up and stand on your feet. Now listen to this. I've appeared to you to appoint you as a servant and as a witness of what you've seen of me and what I will show you. Now, this is a personal confrontation between the Son of God and a Jewish guy. I will rescue you from your own people, the Jews, and from the Gentiles. Now, here's his marching orders. I am sending you to open their eyes, turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan to God, so that, here's the reward, they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. He's talking to a king, Agrippa. And verse 19 says, this is Acts 26:19, first to those in Damascus, that's where he started, the road to Syria, then to those in Jerusalem and in all Judea and to the Gentile. Everywhere I go, he said, I preached. That here's the, when you say, how come the Israelites were so quick to turn away from God, start worshiping the golden calf and all, and grumbling and complaining? The Apostle Paul said, I preached that they should repent, turn to God. And the third thing is, and here's where the Israelites was having some problems, and prove their repentance by their deeds. That's the tough part. Well, you go from there to Romans chapter 2, verse 6. God will give to each person according to what he's done. To those who by persistence in doing good, you say, what did he encapsulate the entire thing? When the Israelites, every time they went astray, you say, what was their problem? They just forgot to get up in the morning and do good. Because watch, those who by persistence in doing good, so it takes a change of mind, a heart, and you, that you see so few in the Old Testament to come out of there who had this quality. Mm-hmm. For the ones who by persistence in doing good, they seek while they're on the earth glory, honor, and immortality, the reward, he'll give eternal life. Just get up and do good, persistently do good. Duh. So watch. But for those who are self-seeking, it was the Israelites when the law was given, the self-seekers, fast forward all the way into modern day America, you say, they just get tangled up in what they want. They grumble and they complain and the food and this. And you say, they're just not content. Right. By just
because
doing
there's
good
always two.
And relying on God taking care of them. They That's said, right. No, we'll. So watch how this ends. For those who are self-seeking and who reject the truth and follow evil, there will be wrath and anger. There will be trouble. This is worldwide ever since God made the earth and put humans on it. There will be trouble and distress for every human being who does evil, first for the Jew, then for the Gentile. But glory, honor, and peace for everyone who does good, first for the Jew, then for the Gentile, for God does not show favoritism. Well, you just add those two texts together and you say, how hard can it be? But I've just noticed people we've converted in by the droves. You say, what's the hardest thing for them to grasp? Live a life of faith. And prove your repentance and the confession you made, Jesus is Lord. Put that into practice.
I wanted to bring up 2 Corinthians 3, because that's what I based my, you know, what I said about the temporary versus the eternal, which Phil was like the selfish rather than unselfish.
Right.
But 2 Corinthians 3, really 4, 5, and 6, you know, those chapters, because he compares the new covenant to the old covenant. You know, he starts talking about Moses in chapter 3, verse 7. He says, if the ministry that brought death, which was engraved in letters on stone, came with glory, you know, like on the mountain that said there was mm-hmm. such a glorious happening, so that the Israelites could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of its glory fading through it, fading though it was, will not the ministry of the Spirit be even more glorious? And you know where he gets to in the end of that chapter, saying whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away, the Spirit, the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory are being transformed into his likeness with ever increasing glory, which comes from the Lord. I mean, here you have this relation from the old to the new, but the same thing was trying to be accomplished, which is a presence and a relationship with God,
right,
with people. And so then he gets to 4, 5, and 6, and he basically talks about that struggle. What I mentioned when he said, outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day, for our light momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory. So we fix our eyes on not what is seen, but what is unseen. But he understood that's always going to be a struggle no matter which covenant you are in.
That's right.
This daily battle. And he gets to chapter 5. We're a new creation. Despite our flaws and despite this struggle, we're representing him,
right,
on earth. I mean, it's just incredible that he's acknowledging, look, I'm going to use you despite the flaws, embrace the struggle, even though it's real. This is what we're doing.
And so Apostle Paul had it best. You say, well, why didn't the Jewish people just do better under the law? They had the strict code. What's this? This is Romans 7. The law is holy. So everyone needs to remember there's nothing wrong with bowing down to God and him only. Not misusing his name.
Just like you do with your kids.
Children, obey your father and mother. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't lie, steal, or covet. You say, well, that's a great code to live by. What's this? So then the law is holy and the commandment is holy. This is Romans 7, if you're keeping up here, about verse 12. Is holy, righteous, and good. All those commands, think about if everybody just obeyed them.
But even the concept of don't put your hand on a burning stove, you tell your kid, well, that's a rule. You know why? Because it's going to hurt you if you do.
Did that which is good then become death to me? By no means. But in order that sin might be recognized as sin. Why would God give them a strict code? He wanted them to realize, even if I write it down, and you have it to fulfill, you still won't do it. Watch. It produced death in me through what was good, so that through the commandment, all this code that Moses received on Mount Sinai, sin might become utterly sinful. Here's the bottom line. We know that the law is spiritual. What a great code. And if the world kept it, can you imagine what kind of world we would have? There would be no murders. There would be no adultery. There would be no stealing. You talk about a great place to live. There's just 10 of them. You think, well, what in the world? Watch. The law is spiritual. Nothing wrong with the law. But I am unspiritual, sold as a slave to sin. Aha. Here's the problem. It's not the law. It's not the code. We've met the enemy, Al, and it be us.
That's right.
And what religious people is, they elevate the code over people. So some people, that's why you get legalism. That's why you get people judging other people. But look, I'm going
to
give you
You are right on target. It's got to be what's unseen. Because when Paul tells that, he's talking about the glory of Moses. When Moses was having this interaction, when he was getting the law, just being close to this proximity, how God was revealing himself to him, he came out glowing like a Christmas tree.
And look, I'm going to make a weird analogy, but the reason these women are drawn to Sinai, because there was an African-American woman, she's like, there's just something, because I was like, what is wrong with you? You know,
what is wrong with a woman in America?
She's like, there's just something in him that is so appealing, you know, inside. And, you know, it made me realize, well, you know what that is? Because Si, as insane as he is, and as funny as he is, and as, you know, all the antics, we all know Si better than the world. And look, deep down under all that is a really good heart.
Oh, he's a genuine
lover of God in his heart and soul as anybody I've ever been around in my life. So that's the appeal, is what's unseen is the Holy Spirit. That's what's the whole appeal with why we were in Virginia and why you're in Texas? I mean, look at us. We've let ourselves go, you know, to a place that's scary. And you're like, well, what is the appeal? It's like I was trying to explain to that guy sitting next to me. He's like, why are you bringing people together? I'm like, it's the unseen spirit of God.
Yeah. Here's the greatest thing for a human being to grasp. Are y'all listening? You say, well, what could it be? The way this works is if you observe human beings, the ones who know they are forgiven of every mistake they've ever made, like in Colossians, they're, because of Jesus' physical body on a cross, they're without blemish, they're holy, they're free from accusation. They are completely and utterly freed from Satan and sin and the guilt of it all. Al, it's that group right there. They'll be quick to forgive others.
All right.
Once you know you've been forgiven, you will let people curse you. It doesn't bother you. You say, hey, just think about it. You won't get mad at them. You'll cut them some slack. You'll be forgiving once you know you've been forgiven of all of your mistakes.
Because
the ones who struggle with it and the Jews, yeah. You got to remember, Al, the law was just keep it or die. But there was nothing there to really change the heart. I mean, right. Now, once the Spirit of God you're given, when right. you put your faith in Jesus, you know, and you're baptized, you're like,
well, you have the greatest love flowing through you. I know we got to quit, but what I'm going to preach on this Sunday is, you know, the DNA of God, which is, you know, light and life and love. But that love, when you think about it, you know, wrath and mercy came later, because before there were any people, that wasn't there. But there was one thing that was there, love. That's why in Ephesians where it said, in love, he predetermined, he predestined us. And that kind of unconditional love, you know, as a fabric of who God is, you know, he doesn't decide to love or he think about love. He just is love. It's been there all along. Well, that's what's flowing through you is my point. The fruit of the Spirit is love.
Look, here's Jesus on a cross. He's at the point of death. They've murdered him. He's barely gasping for air. They've nailed him to a tree, for crying out loud. Thorns on his head.
For nothing.
Never made a mistake. Final words, you are shocked to hear him say, what did he say when he said, forgive them? They don't know what they're doing.
Right.
So that right there is the difference between law and grace.
That's right.
You say, in grace, you look at your sins, you say, I wonder how many I've committed. When Jesus,
you made the point. I think Al needs to lead an invitation song.
Well, when Peter said, how many times, Lord, do we forgive them? And he went big, seven.
Yeah.
Jesus said, 70 times seven, count yours up and see how many it's been. Well, once you understand, you say, good night. I've sinned hundreds of times.
Yeah. Well, his point was 70 times seven times seven trillion.
So all of these hundreds of sins, and then we're having trouble forgiving each other, and we're grumbling against our brother after about the third mistake he makes. You're like, come on.
So it again proves the point of, why would you study Jewish history? And the reason why is because the New Testament was written by a bunch of Jews and one Gentile. And it's about change lives, change behaviors, change everything.
So, because of the character of God.
That's exactly right. So we studied all the way through. That's what we're trying to do on the podcast. We want you to know why we're unashamed. And the best way to do that is to learn exactly what the Word of God says. So appreciate you being here, Unashamed podcast. Be sure and go check us out. Let other people know about it. A lot of people are listening and watching. We run into people all over the country.
Where'd you get this shirt?
Yeah, what about that?
Well, I didn't get one. Phil needs one.
Yeah,
Phil, I know that shirt's clean, but it looks dirty.
No, that's I hadn't had it on but 2 days. Get up and do good. Persistently do good. You say that's the way to roll.
All
get up
right,
in
we're
the morning.
Out of here.
Persistently do
so
good.
Check it out. Jace pointed out, if you go to Blaze TV, I'm sure you can find some merch there, coffee cups and shirts and hats and whatnot, if you want to let other people know about Unashamed. So good eye there, Jace. Advertising.
I didn't notice it.
That's, I know. Yeah.
Wasn't planned.
That's what we do. We are so glad you're watching and listening to the Unashamed podcast. Be sure to like us on Facebook, subscribe on YouTube and iTunes. That's going to keep you up to date with all the new episodes, and it's also going to let other people find out about our podcast. So keep spreading the word and watching and listening to Unashamed with Phil Robertson.